What's up?
I just thought, dang, I forgot to put my NPR back screen on. Just
go ahead and do it now. You can do it now. You can do it while you're on the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Midwest Paratalk Radio here on the Midwest Paratalk Radio Network, live streaming over to youtube.com/@Midwest Paratalk Radio. I want to welcome everybody to the live show. We're going to have a good show for you tonight. I am the G-Man. That is Deb, and she's trying to do technology, so you're going to bear with her for a minute.
Did I disappear?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to do technology, so hang on.
So you click on...
I got to find it first. You sent it to me, and I don't know if it's on my phone.
I sent it to you in chat and in Messenger, I think.
I can't find it.
If I remember right. So tonight we have Joni Mahan coming on. She runs the Haunted New Harmony. And she's an author. She has quite the library of books that she has written dealing with paranormal stories and whatnot. So it'd be interesting to talk to her about that. She's going to be on with us here in the next couple of minutes, and it's going to be a good show. So, you click on, did you find it?
Yeah. So what I do now?
So then you go to banner.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, brand.
Okay.
Backgrounds.
Okay.
Upload the background and then click on the background.
Oh, so easy.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Okay. Is this it? This could possibly be it. It is.
What? Okay. Nope. You put that up on the screen up there.
Well,
go to settings in the bottom.
Okay.
And then go to virtual background.
Oh. You told me the wrong thing.
I might have.
See how you do me?
I mean, you'd think after years of doing this, I would know what I'm doing, but I still don't. It's still a hot mess.
Oh, now it's in the bad spot. You know what?
It's all down.
Huh?
It's down. We'll work on it. I'll get you all worked up.
Okay. I'm just going to get rid of it for now then, because it looks crazy.
It does look crazy. You got a weird aura about you, Deb.
What is that? Why is it doing that?
I don't know. Because it's not a green screen, I guess. But anyway. Okay. Hey, Joni has joined us in the chat. And she's probably thinking, do I really want to do
what
this?
What is wrong with these people?
What have I got myself into? Oh, my God. So let's go ahead and bring her on.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Joni, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. I'm Greg. And this is Deb.
Hi. And sorry about that. I was trying to do something with my background, but it ain't gonna work right now.
It was a neat effect. It made you look very angelic. So
yeah,
you know, not a bad look. Your aura was showing.
Yeah.
Right. So you know, Deb and I were talking a little bit before the show, like you do when you do these things, and you're on our friends list on Facebook. And for me, I mean, we have mutual friends, and I'm sure that's how we connected. But it was really weird because when I started looking at guests and whatnot, and then you were at the Evansville Paracon, the HorrorCon, I thought, man, I got to get her on the show. So I looked for you, and then you popped up in my friends list, and I was like, holy crap. It was like, it was otherworldly. I'm like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad it worked out. Right?
Yeah, me too. So I tell you what, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? I mean, I know that you know, you run the New Harmony Ghost tour. And I know that you are an author, but I kind of want to touch on both bases right now. So let's just get a little bio from you for our listeners, and then we'll start in with all the questions.
Okay, so I'm a paranormal investigator. I've got probably 20 years of experience, and I have written 24 paranormal books over the past probably 15 years. And one of those books was Haunted New Harmony. And I moved to this town 8 years ago and didn't realize how haunted the town was. And I'm a medium, so I'm able to feel the ghosts, and was just blown away after I moved here. And so I ended up going on to write Haunted New Harmony. And once I was finished, I thought I really enjoyed talking about those stories and decided to try doing a ghost walk. And it was just me, you know, I just set it up and put it out there and people started showing up. And now we are in our seventh year, and we now have, there are five of us. So we've got quite a group. We have three separate ghost walks now. So, and I'm working on a 25th book, which is going to be released in September, which is going to be called New Harmony Ghost Stories. So it's an update on some of the hauntings that we've discovered since I wrote Haunted New Harmony.
Nice. Now, for the haunts that are going on there, I mean, I wouldn't have thought, like you, I mean, New Harmony being a haunted location, but what kind of like things do you have going on? Like what could you expect to see if someone was to say book the tour and go through the tour with you? What are some of the things that you see?
Well, New Harmony is a really old town. It was founded in 1814. It was a site of two former utopian societies, which is something you're not going to find anywhere else in the world. On our tour, people are often getting pictures with something in the window or having something touch them or something like that. But lately, within the past, I don't know, started last summer, and it's been going on again, is one of the houses that we visit, the David Lentz house. It's a historic house that was built in like 1820, and it's a museum house, so nobody lives there, and they have a beautiful garden. So we were bring people to that location on our dark side ghost walk, because really we just wanted to show them an example of a harmonious house and what the garden, the reproduction garden, looks like. And we had a ghost story, and I'll say it was kind of a lame ghost story. It wasn't anything exceptional. The story was that there was a guy there painting the fence, and he happened to look up and he saw a man dressed like an old-time German come rounding the corner, and he had lederhosen and pointy shoes and just something you don't ever see in New Harmony. And so he put down his paintbrush, wanted to talk to the guy. And when he looked back up, the guy was gone. Well, I mean, you know, it's an okay story. It's nothing special. But as I was telling it last summer, I think it was around May when this happened, one of the women in my group jumped and screamed. And I said, "What happened?" And she said, "The house just knocked right behind me." And so I walked over. My dog just came in the room. I walked over and I knock, knock, knock on the house, and the house went knock, knock, knock right back at me. And,
oh, wow.
You know, as paranormal investigators, that's something we never see. I mean, you can say, well, you make a sound for us and you may hear a faint tap somewhere, but it's never exactly what you see or what you do repeated right back at you. So this went on for a good weekend. And then it just stopped abruptly. And all of a sudden over the winter, people started contacting me and saying, local people from town. I was walking by the Lentz house and I heard a knock, and more people were telling me the knocking's back. And so we've been doing ghost walks for about 3 weeks now. And twice on the ghost walks, we've heard the knocks. Last week, we didn't hear it at all. So I feel like we're really due for it this weekend. So and it's crazy when it knocks, it's loud and it's right there. You know, it's crazy. So that's one of the things.
Right. Now, do you, are you a member of a paranormal group in the area, or are you just kind of an independent investigator?
I have my own paranormal group, Haunted New Harmony. We also do public ghost hunts where we sell tickets and invite the public in. And we have a pretty, pretty good team. Nice. There's, it depends. I mean, I can have as many people as I wanted to, but our pretty much our core group is five of us. So, and we do house walkthroughs, and you know, we go and do fun investigations. You know, like Indiana State Sanatorium. We've been there a couple times. Waverly Hills, of course, and I've got a bucket list that I want to get out and explore when I'm not doing my own ghost hunts. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, every investigator does. I mean, there's a couple of places that I think we're going to be able to get to with the group that I'm in this year that I probably have been thinking about for a long time. So that's always exciting. Now let's talk about your books. Cause I was kind of going through and looking at your books, the titles and the synopsis that were on there. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you write about and the stories that are in those books without giving too much away.
Well, I have three fiction, series on, Amazon, and those are paranormal based. One of them is a series. The other two are trilogies. And then I go into, I have two haunted house books that are true stories, based on what happened to other people when they moved to the houses. One of them, my first one, is Bones in the Basement, and that follows the S.K. Pierce Haunted Victorian Mansion, and that's in Gardner, Massachusetts. That's been on all the ghost shows. It's been on Ghost Hunters twice, Ghost Adventures, My Haunted House, just you name it, it's been on it.
Right.
I just took a trip to Massachusetts because that's where I lived for 30 years, and I just went back to see my grown kids, and I got to visit and investigate that house while I was back, and it was just as haunted as it was before. But that the story behind that was house was very run down at one point, and it was on the market for sale. It was almost torn down at one point. And this couple from Boston bought it because she loved Victorian mansions and she always wanted to own one. And here was one she could afford. And they did not believe in ghosts. And they did find out that the house had already been on Ghost Hunters before they bought it. And they were like, yeah, you know, we'll get a good house for a good price because all these foolish people are believing in ghosts. And they lasted 2 years before they were chased out of the house. And so that book follows their story.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. I mean, they had some really scary stuff happen there. Apparitions popping up in their faces. They one night they heard a boom, boom, boom on their bedroom door on the second floor. They lived alone. Like somebody, like it rattled the windows. It was so loud and their dogs went crazy. And, you know, of course he jumps up and grabs the baseball bat thinking that somebody had broken in. I don't know why they would knock on the door, but of course there was nothing there, and that house just ran the gambit with hauntings. It was
right.
It was really scary, and I was there. I was friends with them, so I was there for a lot of it, so I can validate that it really did happen.
You said that's
and then S. my K. other Pierce? Haunted S.K. Pierce Haunted Victorian Mansion in Gardner, Massachusetts.
Okay
so yeah, crazy place. If you're ever in the area, they do public investigations and they do tours. You know, my book about that's called Bones in the Basement. But my other haunted house book is kind of near and dear to me. It's Hanover Haunting, the Deanna Simpson story. And her house has also been on all the ghost shows, including Dead Files, so which was a pretty wild ride for them. And I met Deanna because she had already gone through a lot of this, and she was looking for someone to write her story. And she had originally going to have Mary Ellen Guiley write it, you know, very famous paranormal author. But
yeah,
she was already getting sick at that point. She ended up dying of cancer, and she was already getting sick at that point and couldn't finish the book. So I took over. I wrote the book for her. And that one was crazy because I had been to a Paracon in Massachusetts and was on my way back to Massachusetts, Indiana, where I currently live. And I thought, you know, Hanover, Pennsylvania is about halfway. I'll stop. You know, I hadn't agreed to write the book yet. I wanted to meet her and talk to her and see the house. And as a medium, I felt like I could walk in and feel you know, if it was severely, you know, angrily haunted, I would know it. And so, but I was pretty confident that I'd be okay. You know, I was going to spend the night. I had my bag and everything, and walked in, and it was like 10 minutes inside that house, and they were all over me. It was incredibly haunted, very negative, very strong entities. And I didn't last long. I ended up having to walk out on the porch. I'm like, I can't take this. So I told her, I said, I came back and I said, not only will I write your book, but I'm also going to help you get rid of this haunting. And I set things in motion. I didn't get rid of the haunting. I'm not capable of doing that, but I know somebody who can. And it was a wild ride. And, you know, she got out. She got out alive. I mean, you know, it was to a point where it was threatening her life. I mean, at one, she got thrown down the stairs and broke a rib and broke her tailbone into the bed. And I was honored when John Zaffis offered to write the foreword for us. He, you know, the godfather of the paranormal. I'm sorry, I'm getting dry throat. I have to get another drink of water.
Oh, you're fine.
But John Zaffis had investigated it and tried to help her out, you know, with the haunting. And then when he heard we were writing the book, he stepped forward and said he'd write the foreword for us. So that was quite an honor.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Right. Yeah. I met Rosemary Ellen Guiley a couple of times, and I had her on the show way back in the day as well before she had passed. She was a great lady. She, I mean, her
name. Yeah, I think I said her name. Did I say Mary Ellen Guiley? Yeah. Rosemary. Yeah. That's what I meant. I never got to meet her. I've read a lot of her books, though. You know, before I even really realized who she was, and through Deanna, I went and looked at my bookcase, and I had like three of her books on my bookcase. So, you know, I've been a fan. I just didn't know it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I had met her at a couple of cons way back in the day. And actually, when I first started getting into the paranormal, Jason and Grant had a show on an AM station in Rhode Island. And I had called in and was talking to them. And her name was one of the names that they say, hey, if you're really serious about this, jump on her books and read her books, and you know, you could reach out to her and everything and yada, yada, you know, so forth and so on. So, and that's really how I got in touch with her. So that's pretty cool. And wow. Johnny Zaffis, I have a Johnny Zaffis story too. There was a paracon in Danville, Indiana, at all places. Danville is probably, I don't know, quarter bit around. Blink and you know, you pass it. And he was there, and he started packing his stuff up. And my kid at the time, you know, Corey, was probably 11 or 12. And he's like, Dad, is that John Zaffis? And I'm like, yeah, that's John Zaffis. He's like, oh, man, I wonder if I can get a picture. I'm like, well, you can go on over and ask him. I'm sure, you know. He went over there, and Johnny asked him, he's like, so what's your name, and really interested in paranormal? And he's like, yeah, you know. And he's like, well, I'm packing up, but I tell you what, he opened up his cases again, pulled out a picture and signed it for him. And I thought that was like the coolest thing, because he could have just been like, oh yeah, okay, right on, kid. And, you know, have a Coke and a smile. See you later. You know, but he took time out
of it. The first time. You know? Yeah. Well, he is a great guy. I consider him a friend. The first time I ever met him was at Salem Con. It was my very first Paracon. And I didn't know what to expect. I brought in like boxes of books. I didn't know if I was going to sell 200 or 400, you know. So I brought in like, I don't know, way more books than I ever needed. And I had, it was at Hawthorne Hotel. And I borrowed one of the carts that they use to bring suitcases to rooms to get my books out. And as I got to the door, it was an automatic door, and it shut in the middle of the cart and knocked all my books off onto the floor. And there were all these people sitting around looking, watching. Nobody jumped. Nobody came to help me. John started coming through the door from the outside, and he saw me, and he was like, oh, my goodness. You know, and he stopped and helped me pick up my books. And, of course, as soon as people saw John Zappa's picking up books, they were helping pick up books, too. Right. And, you know, just left a really warm feeling. I went on to I've helped, I published John Zaffis's last three books. So I do an author service where I format and upload books for self-published authors. And so to thank me, not this time, but the last time, last summer when I was back in Massachusetts, he invited me over to his house and took me on a tour of his haunted museum. And we had a really nice lunch, and it was really nice hanging out with him and his two co-authors. So, he's a great guy. I'd do anything for him, you know.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's funny. I was watching a video with him. They were doing an interview with him, and they were talking about the haunting in Connecticut. And how he was depicted as the Reverend in the movie, and the Reverend had cancer. Johnny was like, man, I wish somebody would have told me. I never knew I had cancer. He was tripping. He was like, nah.
Yeah, that was, I know there's a lot of cautionary tales about the haunting in Connecticut. I mean, Carmen Reed really didn't make any money from that. You know, that she sold her rights. I mean, you know, it'd be like somebody approaching me on one of my books or something. I'd be all excited. But you got to really, you know, do your research and find out what you're getting yourself into, because they can change the story. They can do whatever they want to, and you still use your story and your name, and then you can't use it. Right. So after I wrote Hanover Haunting, we were just sure that we were going to get approached by someone wanting to make some kind of documentary or film or something about her story, because it's so phenomenal. And he cautioned us. He said, before you do, he said, you talk to me, you know, and we'll get you set up with, you know, some kind of lawyer that can look this over, make sure you're not making the same mistake. So, yeah, it's
right.
Very easy to get, you know, hoodwinked.
Oh yeah. I mean, even with, the parents, you know, Andrea Perrin, up and down, you know, that's not how any of that went, you know,
and
interviews and whatnot. And it was, you know,
intruders, you know, when Tracy Torme bought the rights to it, he took out an 18 month, thing on it. He had 18 months to do something with it. And he did the miniseries, Intruders, the three-part miniseries, and had the name and everything. So, but there was only two scenes in there that were even remotely recognizable from the book. Everything else was all Hollywood licensed. Mm-hmm. They changed everything, and they could, because that's what their contract said. I didn't have anything to do with signing them. So, but yeah, they do that. They, especially Hollywood, likes to do that.
Right.
Yeah, I was on a haunting several years ago with Sam Baltrusis, who's a friend of mine. He's also a paranormal author. He's been on a lot of shows. It was his story, but I was a part of it. And it was nice because they flew me into Massachusetts. I got to visit with my kids for free, and they flew me into, you know, I got to go into Salem to film it. But the story, when they were finished, really, you know, they had to take some liberties because there's some stuff that just wouldn't work. But, you know, just assure you that I would never go to Sam Baltrusis's house and bang on the door and say, let me in. You know, that didn't happen that way. You know, it was like, you know, I was in Indiana when that happened. I texted him. I said, are you okay? So they definitely take some, you know, you know, they take some, whatever the word I'm trying to think of, but liberties, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But, and you know, it's a shame because the stories are compelling on their own. To me, I don't need Hollywood to try to jack anything up. You know, I'm a purist when it comes to haunted or UFO stories, because that's where you get the truth, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's important to me, especially in investigating as well as doing research. I mean, I don't want the sugarcoat, you know, story that is just so overblown and so out of control that you just read like the first two or three lines and you're like, okay, this is BS.
Well, you know what bothers me about it is that all of my paranormal books, and I have quite a number of them about my own really horrible paranormal experiences, but people don't, I've had people comment on one of my haunted true stories, and they said, this isn't that scary. And it's like, because they're so conditioned to the Hollywood version or, you know, the paranormal witness version, you know, if there's not a couch across the room, they don't believe the haunting. And it's like, you try living in this situation. You try feeling somebody breathing down your neck and following you around and, you know, waking you up in the middle of the night. And then you see how scary it is. You know, I really got angry because when they do stuff like that, they discredit everything true. And yes. And it makes it look like, you know, people don't trust what a haunting looks like. They'll have something happen to them and they're like, you know, well, you know, the couch didn't fly across the room, so I guess it's not haunted. But, you know,
right.
They endure things that they didn't have to.
Right. Yeah. And I hate the comparisons between, you know, oh yeah, your story. Well, you know, such and such a story was so much more scary because of this, that, or the other. Oh, look.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was disagreeing with you. I was agreeing with him.
Oh, I was just going to say when they did Travis Walton's Fire in the Sky, and I've known Travis for 30 years, they took a lot of liberties with him, and he was not really happy with that version. But one of the reasons Tracy Torme did that one as well as ours, and he said one of the reasons the aliens in Travis's movie looked like that was because the Hollywood producers didn't want them to look like he actually saw them, because they were too much like mm-hmm. the ones I'd seen and the ones other people had reported. They wanted something different. And I'm like, guys, that's the whole point. Part of it is that we're all, you know, seeing the same stuff. And then that whole scene with the rubber, where he was like encased in that rubber stuff and just like he was in like a vacuum.
Yeah. That never happened. Yeah.
That never happened. No. He said that their reasoning was they wanted to convey the emotional feeling that maybe he might have had. So they did this as a visual. But people don't, when they're watching a movie, they're not getting that deep, you know, they're just watching it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like with Intruders, people would come up to me and say, oh, remember in the movie, their miniseries, this happened to you. And I'm like, I had to tell them. I felt bad because I'm like, that wasn't me. That was a compilation of several cases they put together, but I didn't actually experience that, you know, and then I felt bad because it had been true, but I had no say in it. But yeah, but anyways, sorry, I'm on the UFO side. Greg and I, we do the NPR. When we started this like 15 years ago, he was the ghost guy and I was the UFO girl, and we kind of brought everything together.
Believe in UFOs. I mean, I think anybody would be foolish not to believe in UFOs. I mean, you know, there's got to be other life out there. I mean, it's ridiculous to think that, you know, that there wouldn't be.
Oh,
you know, we're not the end all.
I was investigator for MUFON for about 10 years in Indiana MUFON.
Were you really?
I saw a lot of nuts and bolts cases, and I did a lot of investigating cases. Indiana's quite a little hot spot for that sort of thing, especially up here.
I've seen a couple of things here. You know, I grew up here before I moved to Massachusetts, and my dad was a private pilot. And we lived out on 40 acres in Waitsville, Indiana, which is, you know, a little bitty bump in the road town, but up on top of a hill. And he was out in his shop one night, and he came out and he saw something hovering over the house. It was silent. But, you know, he knew what the lights looked like for planes. I mean, you know, he was a pilot. He knew this. And he said, you know, it was not a plane. And the dogs were howling and going crazy. And so he watched it for a long while. And then he came in and got me and my stepmom, and we came out, and by this time it was higher up in the sky, but I parked myself in the yard and watched it for the next, I don't know, 20 minutes, and it just stayed in one spot. And then all of a sudden, straight up, like at an angle, like that, than anything could have gone. Yeah, it didn't come down like a falling star, it went up. So, and yeah. So that was my first UFO experience. And we've seen some stuff here in New Harmony. One time we were up in the cemetery and we saw three lights almost flying in formation. And they, at first we thought they were, at first we saw one and we thought that somebody had turned loose one of those balloon, what are those called? The balloons with the candles in it. Japanese lanterns. Yeah, we thought somebody had a thing and did that. And we were kind of condemning them for, you know, potentially starting a forest fire. And then all of a sudden we realized there were three lights, and we watched them, and then they got to a point and then they split apart, like the same thing. So yeah, I've seen stuff.
Wow. Yeah. And you know what? You'd be surprised at how many people who report UFOs also report having paranormal experiences. It seems as if it almost kind of goes hand in hand a lot of times. I don't know if it's the person experiencing it that's attracting the stuff, or if something happens
I don't know.
Yeah, it's the chicken and the egg.
Well, I even have a cryptid story, and I did not tell this for years because I thought, you know, I'm already talking about ghosts. You know, people are going to think I'm blue goose crazy if I start talking about Bigfoot, but I saw something when I was 8 years old out in the woods at my dad's house, same place we saw the UFO. And it was hopping sideways across a hill back in the woods. I used to go play in the woods by myself. I, you know, very much a solitary child. And we made eye contact. It was like 7 feet tall. It was skinny though, like it hadn't eaten in a while. And it was the color of a Irish setter. It was kind of a red, it had like longish hair, and it was hopping sideways like a like an ape almost. And we made eye contact, and I stood there for a minute, and I just about peed my pants. I took off bolting out of the woods. And it took me a long time. Nobody believed me because I was 8 years old. I was just an imaginative kid, which I was, but you know, I knew what I saw. And so probably, oh my gosh, 20 years later, I used to follow, I was not into the paranormal yet, but I was following Troy Taylor's Ghost of the Prairie website. It was like one of the very first websites that really dealt with the paranormal. And I read everything on there, like I was glued to it. And I finally got the nerve up and I emailed him and I said, you know, I don't want you to use this for anything because I want to be anonymous, which is really funny because here I am on a podcast talking about it now, you know. But I asked him, I told him what I saw, and he said, oh, absolutely. During, I forget what year it was, like, I don't know, I'll date myself, but it was sometime in the 70s. He said there were between 12 and 1400 Bigfoot sightings in Southern Indiana and Southern Illinois. So, and I got to meet him last year. I went to their, Paracon there in, Alton, Illinois, can't think of the name of the Paracon, but anyways, I met him and I told him, I said, you know, I don't know if you know this, but you kind of modeled some of my career back then by, you know, putting up a website and answering my email. And, you know, of course he didn't remember me because he probably gets, you know, 40 of those a day, but it was kind of a cool full circle moment.
Yeah, my state section director back when I was on my MUFON days, Jerry Sievers, he had an interest in Bigfoot, and he lived down in Vincennes around the Lucky Point area down there. And he had sightings down there around Vincennes and Lucky Point. And he had a plaster cast that he got that he made from one of the sightings. And I'll never forget it because it was huge. I could get both my feet in it. It was so big.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
I always think about that. I wish that I was only eight, so I didn't know about going out to look for footprints and stuff like that. You know, years later, I was like, oh, you know, it would have been great if I could have gone back there. But of course, none of the adults believed me. So there was no, you know, I didn't have anybody to assist me in this. And I, frankly, after seeing that, I was scared to go back to that same spot. Yeah. Like, you know, an 8-year-old's mind, you think it's waiting for me, you know, I'm going to go back there. It's going to eat me all up, you know? So I was, again, it took me a long time before I even went back there. You know, of course, I was all eyes looking around waiting for the Bigfoot to jump out and grab me. So, you know, now I'm a little older. I, you know, understand these things, you know, don't, he was probably just as afraid of me as I was of it. But crazy experience.
Yeah, I've never had a Bigfoot experience. I've had an insectoid experience. But the weird thing, and I tell everyone this, and I'm sure Deb's tired of hearing it, but I didn't start seeing weird things like that until I met her. It is your fault. Dang it.
You're a bad influence or a good influence. Right. Depends on how you look at it. Okay. So explain to me what an insectoid is. Yeah. Or I don't know that.
It was 7 foot tall at best.
Whoa.
But it was a walking, if you were to see a praying mantis walk on two legs standing straight up, that's what that was. And it was in the middle of the night.
And what was the setup? Where did you see it?
I lived in Franklin, Indiana, and the wife and I did a motor paper route. So it was like a 52-mile paper route that we did out in the country. I'd finished up the paper route and I was on my way home. And of course, you know, in the country and it's cold out and there's a little snow on the ground. So it's pretty light and I'm going exceedingly faster than the posted speed limit getting home. And I come around this curve and it's just getting across the street walking. There's a creek bed that went underneath the road and winded down through the neighborhood. And I saw it as it was going down into the grass off the road. I slammed on the brakes, locked them up, tires squealing. I threw it in reverse and went back, and there was absolutely nothing there.
Wow.
But it was a brown color triangle praying mantis head. The legs were articulated backwards, like how a dog's back legs are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, by the time that I had gotten stopped and threw it in reverse and backed up, it was gone. It was down in the ditch in another dimension somewhere.
You know, that's one common, pretty.
He's been bugging me for the last 10 minutes trying to get up here. I don't know why he wants to be on this podcast, but this is George.
Well, welcome, George.
My lucky black cat. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. He's satisfied. He knows what I'm looking at. He's my protector too. I'm telling you, if there's something in my room, he's right there with me. But going back to your story, I mean, You talked about another dimension. That sounds like interdimensional to me, you know, like something that came through from somewhere else. Stuff kind of, it freaks me out a little bit. I'm not good at lying.
Well, you know, Deb and I kind of have a theory that the UFO and the paranormal are connected dimensionally. So I think Bigfoot, I think creatures like whatever it is that I saw, weird things are dimensional. I don't think that, you know, they all came here, and even aliens, they didn't all come here on a ship and land here on this planet and then started interacting. I think there is a dimensional, you know, wormhole or something that they can open and close and in and out. And, you know, I really think that's what happened with what I had saw on the side of the road.
There's a lot of people report that particular entity when they make UFO reports. So, I mean, the mantis is one of the four or five different main characters that people report seeing, the grays being probably the most, and then the mantis and the reptilians, you know, people report seeing them as well. But So, I mean, that's a pretty common shape in the ufology. Mm-hmm. But, and then I feel like Greg and I have talked before about some of the EVPs that we catch, because we got, we get some really good ones. And I really feel like sometimes what we're catching never lived here and aren't necessarily what you would call ghosts or spirits.
Yeah.
Because if we're somehow just briefly, like, it's like a peek into some other layer, you know. I had a, I caught my first EVP about 30 years ago. This is when I first started getting interested in paranormal stuff as trying to study it more, because it'd been happening most of our life. But, and EVPs was something I was really attracted to. And I tried it with my nephew about 30 years ago in my kitchen, and I caught the most beautiful, perfect EVP of an old man's voice that said, "Are the spirits listening?" And as soon as I heard him in the replay, I had this epiphany that, oh my God, we are the spirits somewhere else. Somebody's trying to listen to us, you know, and that just set me off on a whole different path from where I had started.
That makes me, I've had that same thought. There have been times where I've thought that, you know, sometimes we've been connecting with what we thought was a ghost, but it may not actually be a ghost. It may be something from a, you know, another dimension or another planet. And one time we were investigating the Houghton Mansion, which is in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. It's no longer, it was on Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, all those shows. It was, it's not open now for the public. Somebody privately bought it, and I don't know what they're doing with it, but we investigated that quite a few times. It was a very amazing place. But I used to teach a paranormal 101 class in Massachusetts, and I started off just hoping to make a little bit of extra money on, you know, once a week. And what ended up happening was I gathered a group of people that are like, you know, brothers and sisters to me now, even though, you know, I live 1,000 miles away. But what happened was it drew in like-minded people with paranormal, with, you know, abilities. And so I had some pretty amazing psychic mediums that kind of came into their abilities in my class. I'm not saying I made them psychic mediums. I'm saying that, you know, once they tapped in, they helped each other and I helped and whatnot. But we went to the Houghton Mansion as a group. And we were in a room, and we were running just a digital recorder. You know, we weren't using a spirit box or anything like that. And the group was picking up on, they were talking about what they were picking up on. And they said, there's a man in the corner, and then there's a woman over here. And they said, okay, the man just left. Said, the woman is there. And we got an EVP that said, you need to mask yourself. Like, you know, like he was talking to the woman, they can still see you, you know, or they can still pick up on you. You need to mask yourself. And that has stuck with me. Like, I don't think we were talking to ghosts, you know,
right, exactly.
Because that was just wild. And it was like, it was definitely an aha moment for me. You know, what are we dealing with here? You know?
Right.
Yep. That's the stuff I get really excited about. I mean, we've had EVPs.
Oh, me
we've
too.
We've done private, you know, investigations for people, and we've caught EVPs. And when the client has, when we've done the reveal and showed them what we've found, and they hear the EVP, and they'll be like, "Oh, that's Grandma. She just passed away like 2 weeks before," and they recognize the voice. I've had them get so emotional when they hear the voice; they're so certain, you know, that they're all, you know, crying and everything. So, you know, sometimes I think we're getting it, but there's times, sometimes I feel like I'm dealing with something that never lived here and isn't dead, you know? So, and I think that's the most exciting part for me. I get more excited about that than the other stuff.
Well, just like,
It is. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
Oh, I was going to say, just like
with you.
We got an EVP at a house in Franklin Township in Indy, and there were 8 walkie-talkies, and they're all on channel 13.
That was cool.
And one of the walkie-talkies out of the 8 on the table, only one of them keyed off, and it was a little girl's voice, and it was her going, "Hello, everybody."
Wow.
And it made it, you know, and this throughout this whole conversation, you know, it makes me think that I don't think it was a child at, you know, 3:30 in the morning playing with somebody's walkie talkie someplace else that,
right. Right.
That keyed off on it, because all of the walkies would have keyed. But I do think that it was interdimensional, because we caught a man's voice as well. So, you know, was it a dad and daughter that were kind of doing the same thing that we were doing at the same exact time? You know, I mean, who knows?
But yeah, it's like, it makes me think about sometimes in the paranormal realm, we'll be thinking we're talking to a child and we're not. And I don't believe demons would do something like that. Like, I don't think they would bother, you know, like with something so trivial as that. But, you know, gets into it, like they'll draw you in with a little child, which seems harmless, and you get, you know, emotional and empathetic about it. But, you know, who knows what we're really talking to? And we recently, actually, I spent the day trying to chase down one such story. So there's a building here in New Harmony called the Robert Gymnasium. And it was the gymnasium for the local school, built in 1924. And it was only 1 year old when it was put to use for a very tragic purpose. An F5 tornado swept through three states, killed thousands of people. It was called the Tri-State Tornado in 1925. It's still the deadliest tornado in U.S. history. And New Harmony was spared, but the town of Griffin, which is 6 miles north of here, was completely wiped off the map. And at one point, there was it happened at like 4 o'clock on March 18th, and a school bus full of children took them and toppled it over end over end. By the time it was done, 76 people died. And they brought the dead and dying to New Harmony. One of the children survived the school bus crash and ran and got help. And they brought the dead and dying to the gymnasium, brand new gymnasium. Dead and dying were attended to on the gymnasium floor, and the dead were put in the basement of this brand new building, and it became a temporary morgue, and it's been haunted ever since. Well, we did our 8th investigation there. It's a great location for a public hunt. Like, we can divide into, you know, multiple groups and have small controlled groups and actually get some evidence instead of just, you know, running a paranormal sideshow. You know, it's an actual investigation. And we do the Estes method, and we were doing that in the basement. And we did two this year. We did one in February and it sold out. So we set up another one for March. It was March 30th. So we noticed there was one woman who has been to a number of our investigations. She seems very tuned into the paranormal. Her name is Ashley. So we invited Ashley to come and help with the, like, we let the guests try it out, because I don't think people really believe what you're doing unless they get a chance to try it themselves and see what it's like. But we started out each session with Ashley starting off with Estes. And I will tell you that, get Black Cat again. he's on the back of my chair now. But we are always skeptical. Like, we've been around people that have done things that we're pretty sure are being faked. And actually, it was so amazing. Like, we turned the volume all the way up, so there's no way she can hear the questions. We put a blindfold on her so she can't see anybody talking or see mouths moving or anything. And then we hook her up to the spirit box and she says what she hears. And the group will ask questions. And she was answering the questions as though she was hearing what they were saying. She was tapping into a little girl named Anna, who was 6 years old. She said she died in the school bus, and or she died, you know, during the tornado when she was on the school bus, and just all kinds of details about her life. She had a little brother and whatnot. So we've been trying to track down the names of the tornado victims for a long time. And I remember there being, I mean, I live 6 miles from Griffin. So my friend Tracy and I, who does my haunted New Harmony tours with me, we took a drive there today and we found that sign. And then we also went to the cemetery and walked around and looked at all the graves. And there was no Anna. There was no 6-year-old Anna. So we thought, well, maybe she was buried in New Harmony. So we went through, find a grave, and there was no 6-year-old Anna. So there's no history of this child that the psychic medium was tapping into. So is it miscommunication? Is it deliberate? You know, is it something else, pretending to be a 6-year-old to get us interested? You know, I don't know the answer, but I'm like very intrigued by the whole thing.
Oh yeah. You know, it's hard to pinpoint one way or the other. I mean, it just could that, you know, could our EVP have been something other than a little girl? Yeah. I mean, 100%. You know, could EVPs that we take and capture on investigations that we've been on be something a little less nicer than what it really is? Yeah, 100% too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you never really know.
I think that's, you don't know. You just don't know. And that's why it's intriguing. I think that's one of the aspects of it. It's an unsolved mystery. And I want to know. Mm-hmm. I got to know.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Right. And you know, I have a hard time, I have a hard time with the word demon. I really do.
Yeah.
I've been investigating for over 20 years. You know, I've been fortunate enough that, you know, you can look at it like this. I've been fortunate enough to never have crossed anything like that. Or the stories that are being told to us and the pre-investigations from the homeowners.
It's a demon. They're
wishful thinking that they've got something like that. You know, I don't know if it's because they want to be famous.
Well, or, even when we went to Bobby Mackey's and we heard all those stories about Bobby Mackey's. And the guys on TV, Bobby Mackey's is full of demons.
To hell.
I walked in there. I didn't feel nothing until I went to the bathroom and felt like somebody was watching me, ogling me while I went to the bathroom. And we caught some stuff, but it didn't feel like demonic to me. It just felt like some poor soul was bored to death and
alone. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And I believe that there are demons, but I don't believe that they're presenting themselves in haunted. Like, my feeling is that they're more interested in weak links and taking people over, and they're not going to be flipping couches or giving EVPs. I think the paranormal TV shows that are what ruined that aspect, because when ghosts stopped scaring people, they went to demons. Because, you know, it's scarier. And then, you know, you get teams coming in that don't know what they're doing. And they tell the people, scare them to death and say, oh, my gosh, you've got a demonic infestation. And, you know, I have had a couple of demonic encounters. And they were nothing like a haunting. They latch on to people and they start changing. Personalities change, but you know, you can also get the same thing from high level entities like ghosts. You know, if really high level ghost, it can do the same thing. It can start to get into your head and affect you, especially people with, you know, psychic medium abilities. And so it's hard to differentiate between the two. And I don't call anything a demon unless, you know, it's hard to really even confirm it. I have a shaman. Right. Who helps me with my some of my worst experiences. He's saved my life. I will say saved my life. And if he says it's demonic, I'm going to believe him, but I'm probably not going to believe anybody else. Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and like I said, we've been doing this for a long time. And I mean, have I dealt with and have EVPs from nasty spirit? Of course.
Yeah.
And I think that homeowners, like, you know, for example, please don't be offended. So I was watching a show that just came out, season 2, episode 4 last night on HBO Max, of a group of people that proclaim demon activity pretty much everywhere that they go.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I think that my point is, I think that some paranormal teams are misreading the room
mm-hmm.
when they do investigations.
Absolutely.
You know, because I think that some of what was going on in, say, this episode of this particular show, was the homeowners doing, you know, like in meth and cocaine. But I mean, they didn't have a whole lot of paranormal activity that would lead me to believe that, you know, she's being molested by a demon, you know. But I think that's, it goes back to the point I think I made earlier, where I think paranormal victims and paranormal investigators are all pushing that demon level haunt, either to get the notoriety or try to get a TV show, you know? And
I agree with you. Yeah. And it's really terrible too, though, because what they're doing is they're really scaring homeowners and they're misrepresenting, you know, and then they're also misrepresenting the paranormal arena for other people. So, you know, now other people think, oh my God, maybe it's a demon, you know, because I believe, you know, what I saw on TV. So,
I think sometimes they take advantage of people that are vulnerable and they see an opportunity to, you know, do something. It's kind of sad and it's frustrating. The same thing happens in the UFO field as well with researchers who want to make a name for themselves, and they will attack anybody they think. They try to take down everybody and be that one, you know. It's ridiculous. So
I've always
mind my own business and just do my own thing.
I try to mind my own business. It just doesn't work out for me for some reason. I think I like to talk too much crap. But I mean, I finally, you know, and I've been like this for a long time, and I took about 10 years kind of stepping away from the podcasts and the paranormal a little bit, because I've gotten to the point where it's not my job to prove to you that there are ghosts. That's not what I'm doing as an investigator. My job is to collect the data and present to you what my findings are, and then you take it home and do what you want with it. You know, and I think one of the things with the, you know, going with the TV shows, even with the ufology, is that somebody's always trying to make a name for themselves. You know, let's just be truthful and deal with what we find instead of trying to make people believe what we found.
Hi, Joni. This is the first time I've gotten a chance to speak to you, and I'm curious to know. I know you've said you've done this for a long time, been in the field for a long, long time. I wonder if you have a particular case that you did over the years that sticks with you, that stands out in your mind. Like, I don't want to, you know, your favorite maybe, or, you know, I've got a couple of favorites.
Yeah. I don't know. I've done so many. I think there was one that I put in my book, Ruin of Souls, which is my book about Michael Robichaud, the shaman, who has helped me a lot. And I had one of my students, a guy started coming to my paranormal 101 class. I have so many stories, like, and now I'm starting to think there's a bunch of them, but he started coming to my paranormal 101 classes. And the reason was because he was sensitive to it. He could feel them. And he said, we have had some paranormal experiences in our house that we rent from my mother, that it's getting really scary. And it was just like, this has been a number of years ago, so I don't remember all the details, but it was enough that it was provoking that we went in to do a walkthrough. And as a sensitive or as a medium, I hear tones. I'm clairaudient. So I hear like a it's like a static sound. Sometimes it's an earring, but it's my gateway. When I tune into that, then I can start pulling more information. And when it's a really severe case, I just feel, I get that fight or flight like instinct. And I walked into that house and it was like instantly I needed to get out of there. And I've had so many bad experiences. I used to be the brave one that was the first one in the dark room, but start following you home and hovering over your bed, you kind of stop doing that. And I just, we kind of retreated, like I retreated. Some of the team stayed, but I was like, yeah, I can't be involved in this. And it ended up being a really nasty haunting. And it took, there was one negative high-powered male that was holding a bunch of others there. And that was, I don't know, that was just really crazy. You know, Michael ended up cleansing the house and it ended up okay. But I just remember feeling when I walked in there, I was like, it was like walking into a den of lions with like, you know, dead chickens tied around your neck. You know, you just knew you were going to die if you stayed there much longer. And so I think I've learned my boundaries in the paranormal world. You know, there's things that I'm not going to handle and it's above my pay grade. I'll go in and investigate and I'll tell you what's haunting your house, but I'm not going to be the one that sacrifices myself for the sake of a good story. You know?
Yeah. Do right. you feel more vulnerable as a medium when you go into investigation? Oh,
absolutely. Like yeah, absolutely. There can be a room full. I mean, it's twofold. One, it's good because, I mean, if you look at my SoundCloud account, I have like, I don't know, 600 or 700 EVPs on there. They talk to me. They feel comfortable. They can read my energy and they know that I'm genuine. I'm not trying to hurt them. I just want to talk with them. I don't want to, you know, manipulate them or anything. But I think if you're in a room and there's one psychic medium and the rest are just normal people, they're flocked to the one that can feel them because they have a better chance of communicating. And I know we've noticed if we divide into groups, if there's a psychic medium in the building, the rest of us are SOL on getting any kind of evidence because they're going to be following that group, you know? So yeah, I'm very vulnerable as a medium. They follow me home. I'm a ghost magnet. That's another one of my books. It's called Ghost Magnet because it was to the point where it was daily. I didn't even have to leave the house. Like they were finding me even at home. I used to co-host a podcast and I finally had to stop because they were finding me through the guests. Like, you know, they don't need to be in person to find you. You know, they can, you know, they go through the ethereal links or whatever, you know, they find you somehow. And I was having, every time we finish a podcast, I'm like, oh, great, I got a new ghost in my house. Sounds familiar to the story we just heard from the guest. And after about a year of it, I'm like, I can't do this. You know, I need to, you know, so I kind of, there came a point where I quit trying to be out there in the, like there was a point in time where I was attending all the Paracons, I was on all the podcasts, you know, I was out there in the thick of things. And one, I saw how people were climbing and clawing and stabbing each other in the back trying to get famous, and I didn't want any part of that. I just wanted people to read my books. That was all I wanted. But I just started kind of hunkering down. I said, you know what? I'm just going to do my own thing here in New Harmony. I'm going to run my ghost walks, and we're going to do our investigations, and I'm not going to worry about what everybody else is doing. And I watch them, you know, from afar, and I'm sure you guys do too. They're always fighting. Like, there's always some kind of big, you know, people drama, hate each other. Yeah.
And I'm like, ugh, be gone with you. I have no time for that.
I backed out. Yeah, I backed away from all that because I didn't want to be a part of it. But I don't know. That's
I feel like you're like me. I just want to do what I love to do. And maybe if I help somebody right. along the way, then I did a good, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No. And I'm curious. I mean, I will, you know, admit I want to know more, you know, I want to learn more. Yeah. And, you know, if you know, if you have a question about, like, for here, for New Harmony, it's very well documented historical town, but there's things we don't know. And if you want to know the true story, why not go right to the source? And so we turn these investigations into like archaeological digs. Like, you know, we're trying to uncover, you know, the truth of what happened. And we have gotten answers, you know, it's been interesting.
Nice. All right. So we're coming up and past the top of the hour. It's been a pleasure. Joni, tell everyone where they can find you.
Well, all my books are on Amazon.com, and I do have a website. It's JoniMahan.com. It's also my hauntednewharmony.com website. If you want to take a ghost walker investigation with me, you can find me on the same spot. I am on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Although if you find me on Facebook, you'll just see a lot of cat videos. But I do post some paranormal stuff. So that's me. That's where you can find me. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being on. I'm glad that we got to connect. So yeah, guys, go out and check Joni on her website, JoniMahan.com. And Joni, thank you. And we will talk to you soon.
It was great to
all
meet
right.
you.
Thank you. All right. Bye. Nice to meet you as well. All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, you guys, that was Joni Mahan, and it was cool to have her on. She has some good stuff.
Interesting. She's got a lot of interesting stories and a lot of experience, and I love that kind of stuff.
Right. Could you guys
talk for another couple hours, but
Right. Yeah, you guys
I'd have to pee. So
that's what happens when we get old, Deb.
Yeah, I know.
Go out and check her website. She's got plenty of books out there on the website. And she says she got a new one coming up in September. And go out to the New Harmony if you're in the area and do the ghost walks with her.
That sounds like fun. They had ghost walks in Irvington that I've gone on a couple of
times. I remember those.
At Halloween time. And I love that. They still do it, I think.
Yeah.
Those are fun and informative.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. They were doing it, I think. The wife worked in Irvington for a while. And
stomping grounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they were doing it then, but that's been years ago because we're old. So who do we have next week? What's on the schedule for next week?
Next week we have us until further notice. Yeah. We don't have a guest scheduled now until the 23rd of May. So,
really?
If you want to be a guest, hit us up if you want to come and tell us your story.
Yeah, definitely.
Here we are. Otherwise, you're just going to have to put up with me and Greg talking about whatever.
I might reach out to a couple of people and see if I can get them to come on, talk a little ghost stuff. I still want to reach out to Andrea Perrin. I want to try and get her on the show for you guys. I'm also trying to get Dalen Spratt from Ghost Brothers. I'm trying to get a hold of him. And I need to reach out to Jason Hawes because I had spoke to him a little bit at the Paracon that we were at a month or so ago. And he said that, you know, he does podcasts and whatnot. So I just need to reach out to him. He's got, by the way, if you're a Jason Hawes fan, he's got a YouTube page out there where him and his YouTube production partner are going out to different locations and doing haunts. So that's been pretty cool. It's still, you know, it's really weird. It's still like the Taps production quality where it's like a production studio that's doing it. But it's just him and this other dude, maybe two or three other guys. But it's
those are the best ones, though. I don't like big, giant investigations with two dozen people.
Right.
I like the small ones, you know, five people or less. It's more productive. And I don't know. I just like more intimate stuff better.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And
more coffee for me, too.
You don't need no more coffee. You just go to the PP. Okay, then. Rhodes Hotel is coming up for BIPs.
Woo!
On the 8th, and it's going to be awesome.
I'm going to be there too.
Yes, you are.
Yay!
And then I looked at Fort Mifflin in Pennsylvania. Fort Mifflin in Pennsylvania. It's not very expensive to go out there, and you have 10 people to go out there, and it's like Mansfield. I mean, it's so big that you'll never run into anybody. So
where's that at? Well, we've still got to get hooked up with Forrest too. Forrest is a great spot, and he's got all the good toys, you know. Plus, I just love him, and it'd be so fun to hang out with him and you and everybody. Right.
I really would like to push it out until June, July. Mm-hmm. So we ain't got to wear coats at night.
Right. That sounds good. I don't like warm coats at any time.
Yeah. I'm not talking to, you know, I'm not trying to be out in the middle of the night freezing my cojones off because we're trying to catch some ghost stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you guys remember, go over to Deb's page at debshome.com, and you can pick up her books over there. You can go to Midwest Fair Talk Radio, read a little bit about us. I've got a new bio that I'm going to put up for myself finally. Yay. On the webpage. Go to bipspara.org and check out the website over there for Boonville, Indiana Paranormal Society. I'm on that page. And we got a calendar up. I'm going to start filling it up with investigations on that as well. But if you're interested in being on the show, you can email me at gcable@midwestparatalkradio.com. And you can also put in a request on the website, midwestparatalkradio.com. Contact us, and it'll send me a thing, and we'll get you scheduled on for either next week or the week after, because we're busy the 23rd. So,
Lord have mercy.
All right, you guys, we appreciate you listening. Remember, if you're on the YouTube page, remember to subscribe, like, and hit the bell notification. And we will see you guys next Thursday night, 9 East, 8 Central, here on Midwest Paratalk Radio. See you later.
Bye.